Oh, he's gone. Come on, somebody. If that ain't trust, I don't know what is. But I'm excited to be in here today. We're going to continue going through Exodus today. And I have to know, has anybody been enjoying Exodus so far? What a fun book of the Bible. I love seeing the stories, all the signs of wonders, the way God moves. And where we've been so far, we've seen some signs and wonders, and we've seen God move in some miraculous ways in the story so far. But today we get to one of the greatest miracles in the Old Testament, at least one of the most popular miracles in the Old Testament. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Come on. It's time for the Red Sea. Now, I remember going up to the Sight and Sound Theater and seeing this live, and boy, the waves started coming and going, I'll get you amped up. And I wish I could sing and get you guys all pumped up today, but you don't want to hear me sing. Maybe in the later portion of the message, but be a good time. But today we're going to be in Exodus chapter 13. For those of you who haven't been with us the last couple of weeks, we've seen as the plagues have been dropped over Egypt, Pharaoh's heart has been hardened over and over again. He's not going to let God's people go. But then last week we saw as every firstborn child, son, was killed, Pharaoh's heart was changed, and he told the people of Israel to get out of there. And so today we start off in chapter 13 with them remembering what God had done in their life. And so they made a decree, simply was the first of anything that came out of any womb was going to be dedicated to God. And so they've seen these signs of wonders. They've seen the amazing things God has done. And they choose to recognize and to honor and to remember what God has given them. I'm going to give you a heads up. It doesn't last for very long. But then as they're leaving, you can see in verse number 17, or sorry, not 17, sorry. Yeah, verse 17. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of land of the Philistines, although that was closer. For God said, let the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. But God led the people around the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea. And the people of Israel went out to the land of Egypt equipped for battle, and Moses took the bones of Joseph with him. For Joseph had made the son of Israel solemnly swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry my bones with you from here. And they moved on from Succah and encamped in Etham on the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from the people. I want to emphasize this. They just saw signs of wonders, and they're continuing to see the signs and wonders of God. I don't know about you guys, I've never been walking out in the woods and seen a pillar of fire lead me to get home, okay? Or a pillar of dust. God continued to show them signs and wonders and continued to lead them. And they're still going to choose to have a little bit of doubt to creep in here in a second. Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the people of Israel to return back and encamp in front of Pi-Hahiroth. I probably just destroyed that. It's okay. Between Migdol and the sea, in front of Baal-Zephon, you shall encamp facing the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the people of Israel, they are wandering the land, the wilderness has shut them in, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them, and I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord. And so they did it. But when the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, the mind of Pharaoh and his servants was changed toward the people. And they said, what is it that we have done? Have let Israel go from serving us? So he made ready his chariots and took his army with him and took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt with the officers with them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and he pursued the people of Israel, while the people of Israel were going out defiantly. The Egyptians pursued them, all of Pharaoh's horses and chariots, and his horsemen and his army, and overtook the encampment by the sea. And when Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared them greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said, "Moses, were there not enough graves in Egypt for us to die in? Didn't we tell you to leave us alone and let us serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better of us to serve the Egyptians and to die in the wilderness." They already forgot the signs and wonders. And Moses said to the people, "Fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you only have to be silent." The Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry out to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward, lift up your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea, and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh." And I think we all know what happens next. The Red Sea is divided. Israel goes in. The pillar of dust and fire protects the Israelites. And then it lets the rest of the Egyptians go into the water. Moses once again looks at the water. And all of Pharaoh's army is destroyed. So much that as the Israelites are on the other side of the Red Sea, they look up and they see the dead bodies of their enemy floating on the shore. But earlier this week, I was hanging out with Pastor Mark and Pastor Zach. We were going to pick up some pumpkins for Sugar Rush. And we started talking a little bit about the Israelites because they're one of my favorite groups of people to kind of make fun of a little bit. Because as we're going to see, as we keep going on through Exodus, or even if you get into Numbers, or if you get in the book of Joshua, they continue to see the greatness of God, but when it comes to getting hard, they repeatedly doubt his greatness. Fear trembles in their hearts and in their minds, and they often turn their back on God. And to me, that was hilarious. But Mark looked at me and said, "Pastor Clayton, the church does that all the time. We do that every single day." And it got me thinking about often what the posture of Christians look like. You know, Jesus never promised us life was going to be easy. He never promised us that once we were Christians, there's going to be sunshine and rainbows. And oftentimes, as we go throughout life, every single one of us is going to face something challenging, scary, or seems impossible. But you know, all the true Christians that I see on Facebook, come on, everybody, aren't always the most positive people when I see them post. The Christians that I run into Walmart who are facing a tough time aren't always the most positive people. Anybody back me up there? Anybody seen some of that? For some reason, when we get to election cycles, tough times, bad doctor reports, instead of trusting God to continue providing and doing the signs and wonders in our life, oftentimes, we do the opposite. Trust. Not always an easy thing, is it? You know, there's two kinds of people in the world. There's the ones that trust everyone immediately, and the one that doesn't trust anybody at all. Come on. We got some of those in the house. I know we do. But trust. You know, my wife trusts me a lot. Oftentimes, we'll be in bed at like 11 o'clock at night, and she'll look at me and say, "Did you lock the door?" And I'll say, "Yeah, I did." "No, you didn't." And she'll get up and go double check. Real trust. Real trust. But you know what, guys? There's been times in life where I've trusted the Lord with everything. But there's been times in my life where I haven't. And as I was studying, as I was looking through this today, I was reminded of a time in my life, shortly before most of you met me, where I probably had some of my biggest doubts, where I faced some of the hardest challenges, and my faith wasn't in it. Believe it or not, there's been times in my life I've been more of an Israelite than I'd like to admit sometimes. My sophomore year of college, I had a roommate named Cooper. And Cooper was the textbook goober, all right? The dude was fun to be around. He was a clown. He was hilarious. He was a great hang. And he was my roommate, and I did more babysitting, it felt like, than I did studying that semester. Because Cooper, like, our first week was buying a piranha. Why? I don't know. We just wanted a piranha. And the best was he found this picture, this poster of Virgin Mary, like, praying like this. And he found another one with Tupac going like this. And he hung them up over our dining room table. And I had to tell him, hey, Cooper, we can't do that. We're at Bible college. Might be a little sacrilegious. But Cooper was a great guy. He was fun to be around. He's one of my best friends in the whole world. And at my college at the time, is at James River Leadership College, we had an apartment complex about half a mile away, and there was a dark access road going up to the church. And so because there were so many of us in the college, we couldn't park at the apartments anymore. The guys, chivalry's not dead, ladies, had to park up at the church and walk down the access road to get back to our apartment. I'll never forget, I got home from my campus that night, and as I was walking back, I saw Cooper and my buddies playing basketball out there, and I went and chatted with them a little bit, and they offered me to wait a minute, walk home with them. I said, no, I'm going to go ahead and go. And I started walking down the access road. I sat down on my chair, turned on my Xbox, and got a call that I'll never forget. About 2 minutes after I'd left, as Cooper was walking down that access road, him and another student were mowed over by a minivan. Proceeded to have one of the worst nights of my life, leading into a couple weeks that were awful. Having no clue if my friend was going to live, whether he was going to die, and even if he lived, if he would ever be the same. And I had no faith. After a couple days, Cooper's in a coma. Everyone's praying. You know, we're having prayer nights for Cooper, doing all this stuff. Someone had this great idea of, hey, we're going to go to Cox South, and we're going to walk around it and pray like it's the walls of Jericho. And meanwhile, after I'd become through some of my most formational years in ministry, I was seeing signs and wonders. I was seeing all these great things happen. And we got to that hospital, and I sat on a bench, and I sulked. I had seen the works of God, but yet I didn't trust God to move in the way that I thought he should. Unfortunately, church, oftentimes that's the posture we take. We like to say that we trust in God, but our actions and the way we behave tells the world that we don't. So trust, it's not always an easy thing. The Israelites had a hard time trusting God, even when they had seen the signs and wonders. We're going to get back to Cooper here in a little bit. But I have four easy points for you guys today. If you've never been here when I preach before, I'm quick, I'm efficient, I get you out of here, all right? Pastor Brent was about 15 minutes over last Sunday, so we're going to have to cut that back. I got to get it back for the month. And so, but I have four quick points I want to give you guys today. And then we're gonna close at the altar. But trust, not always easy, but four ways I think we as a church are called to trust in God. Number one, trust God where he leads you. I love at the beginning of this story, it tells us there was a quicker way, there was a more efficient way for the Israelites to get to the land God had promised them, but yet God took them a different way because he didn't think they could handle it. Y'all ever been taken on a different path than you thought you were supposed to go on? Ended up somewhere you didn't think you belonged? There was a time in my life, and I think I've told this story before, and I'm sorry, you guys probably don't want to hear my stories today, but I think they're helpful for you guys to know that I struggle with this too. But I went to James River College. I was on fire. I was ready to go preach the word. I was ready to get all this experience. I was ready to go. And I get there, and they send me to North Campus, which is fine. I have no issue with it. But for whatever reason, the lady who was in charge of me didn't like me. So my first, like, 6-7 months in ministry, I had no experience. I'm going to get there in a little bit. I know this. Everything's experience. Everything's valuable. But I'm wanting to learn how to do skits. I'm wanting to learn how to do characters. I'm wanting to learn how to preach. I'm wanting to learn how to do worship. And my job was to clean the slushy machine. Now, to start off, I'm like, heck yeah, let's go. We're to clean the slushy machine. But after months of cleaning the slushy machine, I'm starting to wonder, did I lose my shot already? Am I that bad at this? But I never even got a try. After months and months and months and months and months, I remember having one of the worst attitudes I'd ever had. And this guy that I knew that was known for having a really bad attitude pulled me aside and goes, Clayton, your attitude stinks. That's a wake-up call right there. It's like a murderer telling someone punching someone's a bad thing, all right? And so he starts chewing me out, and my attitude shifted a little bit. And it come to find out another pastor who was also involved in kids' ministry had been watching me, knew what I'd been doing, saw how hard I'd been working cleaning the slushy machine, and brought me on as his intern the next semester. Sometimes where we are doesn't seem like we're in the right spot. Sometimes it looks like we're going in the wrong direction. But church, let me tell you, trust that God has you and is leading you where he wants you to be. Sometimes there's a reason that we don't understand. I love Proverbs 3:5. I know many of you know it. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not into your own understanding. I often like to tell my wife I'm right. Sometimes I quickly learn maybe I'm not. My understanding is flawed. It's not always perfect. Probably about the 98% range there. But I promise you, God's understanding is even better than our own. Come on, somebody. Number two, trust in God in the heat of battle. Sometimes I think this is the only time Christians try to trust in God. But it is important. Trust in God in the heat of battle. The Israelites had seen God do great things. They had seen them deliver them from Egypt. They had seen God do all of the plagues and these signs of wonders. They'd seen the pillar of fire, the pillar of dust. But yet when one more challenge came, their faith was gone. Trust in God in the heat of the battle. And here's why. When people know that you have faith, when people know what you believe, and they know you're going through a hard time, there is no greater testimony than watching you have faith in God while you're facing the hard things. And I'm going to give you an example today. She's probably going to slap me after this, and that's okay. The last few months, Deanna K. Spears has been in my kids' ministry. While she has been going through some of the most tough things that I couldn't understand. But the first thing she told me was, all I want is to remember my relationship with Jesus. And that spoke to me. That stuck with me. And Deanna, you have given me faith that I didn't have from watching you live your life the right way. By loving God in the heat of battle. Church, your trust in God is a witness to other people. And Deanna, since you told me you won't come back to kids' church, I want to tell you thank you. your encouragement to me has been otherworldly. I have loved having you back there, and you have encouraged me in so many ways. You ever want to feel good about yourself? Go talk to this woman. I'll have one of the worst sermons I think I've ever had, and she'll look at me and say, Pastor Clayton, that spoke to me today. Thank you. Put that on YouTube. But trust in God in the heat of the battle. Trust in him when you're going through the tough things. Not only for your own health, your own spiritual health, but for the spiritual health of the people around you. Trust in God in the battle. And then third, trust in God after the victory. Now, I'm not going to sing to you guys today, but the Israelites get through the splitting of the Red Sea. They get saved. They're on the other side. Things are going well. And they just start singing. They start praising. They start being thankful. I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The Lord is my strength and my song. Pharaoh's chariots and his host he cast into the sea. The floods covered them. They start to worship. Oftentimes, we get praying in the heat of battle. We get asking for faith in the heat of battle. We ask God to move in wonderful ways in the heat of the battle. But then, we get done, and we just go back to living the way we were. Have faith and trust, not only before or after. My last point today, and the place I really want to land this today, have trust in God in the in-between. What I want to encourage us with today, guys, is oftentimes we get pushed away from our faith and our trust because it only matters when we're going through something that seems too big for us. When we get the cancer diagnosis, when we're having the family issues, when we lose our job, when the hard things are going on, that's when we want to have trust and faith in God. But we don't worry about it in the in-between. Anybody ever been there? I know I have. And it boils down simply to this. Trust comes from the daily decision to be in God's presence. Choosing every day to put your trust in God is going to build up your faith to where you can move mountains and set examples for other people and other Christians when you're facing the hard, challenging thing. My first year in college, they gave us a book. And honest to God, it was one of the most boring books I've ever read in my life. But I've since read it multiple times. It was called The Celebration of Disciplines. And at first, I'm like, why are we reading this book? Because in it, it would tell you, hey, you should pray. Okay? You should fast. You should worship. You should spend time in solitude. Like, man, guys, you really had to write a book on this. This guy's making millions of dollars off this book when you could just do all those things. It didn't make sense in my head. But as I got older, I started to read the book again. I needed it for something else. There's another class I had to read it. And they talk about the celebration, the positivity of daily choosing to do the disciplines. The daily choice to spend time in God's presence, which to me is simply daily deciding I'm going to put my trust and my faith in God every single day. Prayer, fasting, reading, meditation, solitude. All of these things can sometimes feel like a hindrance to us in the moment. The whole point of the book was daily decide to celebrate these things as your walk with Christ. And I've never met somebody who fasts weekly who feels far away from God. I've never met somebody who prays every single day who feels far away from God. I've never met somebody who reads their Bible every day and surely studies it that feels far away from God. What does it look like to trust in God in between? It means putting our faith and our time and our resources into growing closer with God. I don't know about you guys. You ever been to the gym before? Anybody ever been to the gym? Try to lift some weights, okay? I'm not the strongest guy in the world. But I'll never forget, I was working at the gym right when I started here. I wasn't much of a weightlifter back then. But I had a buddy who tried to get me in. His name is Joel Salmon. And the first day he got up, and he was benching like 225, 245, can't remember what it was. I was like, oh, I'm going to try this. I'm bigger than Joel. I'm stronger than him. And I get up there, and there was no getting it up. And he just came, and he started laughing at me. But here's what was happening. I was trying to flex a muscle that I'd never worked out before. You can't have big biceps unless you do your curls. You can't expect to have faith in God in the big things if you're not willing to have faith in God in the small things. Where is your trust? Who do you trust when things get hard? Who do you trust when things seem impossible? I know it's not easy. And Olin, if you'd come up and start playing guitar for me, that'd be awesome. It's not always an easy thing in the heat of battle when things are tough to say, God, I put my trust in you. But at the bare minimum today, guys, my encouragement to you is to just not do the opposite. Let's not doubt God. Let's not doubt God to do the impossible. Let's not doubt God to move in our lives in ways we can never forget. But instead, let's put our trust in him. Because even though the Israelites are going to repeatedly lose their faith in God, God is still going to show up for them over and over and over and over again. And what I love about this book is it's a testament of God showing up not only in the Israelites' life, but in people's lives over and over and over. You can hardly read a chapter of this book without seeing a miracle, without seeing a sign of wonder, without seeing God move in somebody's life. And church, he's still doing the same thing today. He is still moving. He still wants to work in your situation. He still wants to do the impossible. But I'm just asking today, can we have some faith in him? You guys would stand up with me today. One of the greatest things we can have as an individual, I think, is the ability to look inward. Instead of blaming others, to ask yourself, okay, what can I do? And so as we're closing today, I simply want to ask you a question. I want you to answer honestly. I'm not making you shout out loud. I'm not making you raise your hand. I want to ask, do you trust him today? Do you have faith in him in the hard things? And if the answer is not yes, that's okay. I think it's important that we spend some time asking God to give us that faith and trust in him. And so church, if that's you today, I simply want to open up this altar. Brother Olin's going to sing us a song. And I simply want you to come up here and just say, God, I need your help. I need your trust today. I need you to help me to have faith in you, to have trust in you, even in the scary things, even in the hard things, and even in the things that seem impossible. So Brother Olin's going to sing us out today. If that's you, just come up and tell the Lord, hey, I need you to draw me closer to you today to help me trust you.